Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Currie, I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. And now you will be, this Sunday, aware of somewhat the shape of the election result. Of course, it may not be final, but you will have some reaction, no doubt, to that. I am making this program before the weekend, so I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't tell you what's going to happen. Despite all indications of polls and everything, I still think there will be some surprises in some electorates, and certainly there are some very desperate characters out there throwing everything at it and offering the moon. So it'll be very interesting to see how it all pans out. Now, one of the features of the campaign that we haven't talked a lot about ourselves in the Senior Focus sessions has been mental health. And mental health issues in New Zealand are quite predominant. I mean, one in every two New Zealanders are going to have some sort of mental health incident, condition or issue during the course of their life, which is significant. And not just something like a passing flu. So what we really need to be aware of is that we have a population with high mental health needs, and these peak sometimes when people are in transition. It may be for children changing schools. It may be for teenagers, apart from growth spurts and body changes. It may be issues about achievement. It might be issues about what they're going to do when they leave school. And for people in young adulthood, these days the kind of watershed markers like leaving home are very blurred because of the high cost of rents. A lot of people stay on living with their parents for many years, and so the transition points have been stressed for various reasons. Children changing schools three times in a year because the parents are renting and can't afford the rents and move on and so on, and move in with rallies and then move on to another group of rallies because they get kicked out. All that kind of scenario impacts on children changing schools, so that they're very disrupted in their sense of identity and friendships. So there are many triggering points, and it can be genetic, it can be the environment, it can be stress of change, too much change. So that governments do impact on the mental health of the population as a whole in various ways, on the kinds of services that are available, the access to the services, the cost of the services, and also on overall attitudes in terms of how they manage things. Now, COVID-19 is a very good example. It's possible to whip up a lot of fear, and people will have fear reactions when they're in lockdowns and having to be contained. And we're seeing that in Victoria right now. The Victorian government has had a very strict approach to inner city Melbourne because the pandemic was so out of control. And as a result, even with 11 new cases yesterday and one death, they're in a situation of, can they free up on the Sunday, and can they go to kind of level one or open up the whole of inner Melbourne for people just to move around in that space and not go out to the region? Is that possible, or is that going to be a step too far, and will people be really reactive because they've been 14 weeks in this very strict lockdown? I mean, they're not allowed to travel more than 5Ks from their home. They're only allowed to go out once a day. They're only allowed to exercise with one other person outside of their gate. It's a pretty strict lockdown, and it's really stricter than what we had here under level four. and it's been going for 14 weeks. So it's not surprising there are people who are frightened, fearful, who are adopting conspiracy theories and feeling very reactive generally. I mean, they're not facing an election over there, so it's a different ball game for us. But we haven't really suffered compared with a lot of what's gone on in a lot of the countries, and we haven't suffered from severe lockdowns. But our lockdowns have had bigger impacts economically. So even though they're shorter, they haven't been inconsequential. And the mental health stress for people running businesses has been huge. It's changed the way they do business. It's changed how they relate to customers and how much more online work they have to do in order to survive. It's changed how much the balance is between working from home and working from the office. It's changed how people check in and relate to each other. There's surveillance put on people. So sometimes the computer that the person is using at home is actually monitoring all that they're doing. And it's quite invasive for some people. That's quite a stress. So these are all levels of change that have taken place under COVID. So nothing is business as usual, and ordinary expectations and ordinary ways of checking on people and so on have moved on. And so we're now living in a whole new world, and even those of us who work from home or work as volunteers or who have a lot of choice and freedom over the hours and the focus of the work and how often you do it and so on. Even in that situation, and people who are part-time self-employed, there's still an enormous amount of change because everybody else has changed. A lot of the mainstream businesses have changed. You have to change to fit in with them. And also you have to assess risk. And so anybody over 70 is more careful about travelling on public transport, even if it's not under level 2 anymore. There's still concern. I mean, the other morning when the bridge was out of order and bus travel was pretty well essential, it was very difficult to envisage travelling on buses that became very overcrowded because the double deckers weren't allowed on the bridge, and the single decker buses were bulging with people. So there was no social distancing. And that is quite stressful if you're in the over 70 bracket and you've got any kind of health condition that might lead to secondary complications if you were to get COVID. So there is a genuine fear there for some people when they're going out, when they're moving around. They are wanting to know clearly what their odds and risks are in different environments, and they're wanting to assess that before they will decide to attend something. It's something that has to be factored in if you want to communicate with seniors as a group and you want to enjoy their company and have their involvement in activities and events. So I guess wherever we are, whatever level we're at in society and whatever changes we're going through, we need to be equipped to understand better what coping strategies work, how you can decrease your anxiety, how you can lift depression, what are the mood changes, what are the things that you can do. Because many people self-medicate. Alcohol is a very good example. Some people self-medicate using cannabis, and hence the intent of this referendum is to decriminalise that and put it on a level playing field with alcohol. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. That's another issue that we will have a clear steer from the referendum on. But basically, at the moment, people choose to self-medicate as a first port of call. And depending on how they do that, then will depend on what other assistance they seek. What is available to people is there is a text 1737 that you can send on your phone and get counselling support. And that's very helpful initially with a problem, because no matter whether it's workplace bullying, whether it's feeling out of sorts with a volunteer in your team, whether it's a relationship problem in a family, rather than self-medicating, you can actually talk it through by texting. And you might say, oh, I don't think that's me. But it's worth trying out, because you might be very surprised how effective it can be at helping you organise your thoughts and getting those thoughts shared and out there. Now, I've also been aware that over this past week there's been Pink Shirt Day, and a lot of people wearing pink shirts and encouraging people to be out there, to be vibrant, positive and uplifting in terms of what they practice and how they get along with others. And the Mental Health Foundation are behind this, and they have put posters and stickers around and so on, and there are people really wanting to get the message out there that workplace bullying is A, not to be tolerated, and B, that there are actions that can be taken. And there are very good programs in the workplace that are being set up. I came across a website, www.vibe.fyi, and that's also in conjunction with the Mental Health Foundation. It's a very good program because it's preventative, because it's accessible in many places, and you know, they really make it for everybody. It's also evidence-based, so it's not asking you to do all kinds of things that are not researched. It's based on quality outcomes that have come from research. And it also benefits the whole community, because when people actually learn how to cope with anxiety, how to better handle depression and mood swings, how to better engage with themselves when they're not feeling good, and how to not necessarily snap out of it, because that isn't able to be done very often, but how to be kind to yourself. So when people actually learn to model appropriate responses and they learn how to encourage others to use coping strategies as a first port of call, then these benefits flow into the community. People in their families and amongst their friends share these strategies, and more people are better equipped to handle their mental health issue when it crops up. So that's the theory behind it, and the practices going on right now. And often older people in families and in communities sought out by people who want mentoring, who want just a quiet ear to talk something through. And it can be really helpful if you understand these sort of strategies and you've got them under your belt to share with other people, even if you don't need them yourself. So by participating in activities in the community that are designed to teach these strategies, you can become a really valuable champion and resource person. I think it's really great that people like Todd Muller were able to talk to the nation about their experience stepping up into a stressful role and then finding themselves overwhelmed with anxiety, really struggling with panic attacks, really unable to manage themselves in a public space. And that's, it must be a very scary experience. And I think it takes courage to share what that was like and to explain yourself and to actually be transparent about your experience as a role model for other people, to make it easier for people to look at themselves and go, well, that's actually a little bit like what I'm like, and I'm a bit scared to tell anyone about it. I think it can be really valuable to have people who are courageous and willing to take risks and willing to make themselves available as a resource like that. Not everyone can do that, but those that can make it easier for everyone. So we're going to move into a relaxing break, and I've chosen Bette Midler's song Wind Beneath My Wings because I think that's what we sense we need. When we are struggling with things, we need a breeze to just lift us up. So enjoy the music, and I'll be back to talk more about mental health of New Zealanders. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, and I'm talking about mental health awareness in New Zealand at the moment, and it's particularly important, I think, because it's come to the fore. It's a very important part of conversations around COVID and important conversations around our changing workplaces. Workplace bullying is a very big issue in New Zealand. It's a lot worse in New Zealand than other countries. And people who come here as migrants or refugees are often in a one-down position, and because they're not got residency or citizenship, they quite often in a situation where they feel they have to put up with whatever, however they're treated, because they can't really have a voice or do anything about it. That's not strictly true, of course, but that's often how they interpret the situations they find themselves in. And that's why it's really particularly important that we have really strong awareness of the mental health issues, that we have awareness of different groups in our diverse New Zealand, that we understand the diversity in Aotearoa and how that impacts on life for people and choices they make, and just so that we can be kind, because sometimes we can be saying things that we think make people feel that they're matey and part of the gang, but they actually subtle sort of put downs in a way, or they're just a bit edgy, and they're not necessarily understood by the people who are receiving them, and so they can be uncomfortable and even feel hurt. So we've got to be just aware, a little bit more aware of how what we do is as a joke and cast off as somewhat being fun can sometimes be a reflection of a attitude of racism. It can be actually quite heavy and quite inappropriate, and we haven't ever looked at ourselves and considered how it's coming across. So I've been very impressed with our Race Relations Commissioner. Ming Foon has commissioned some videos and some ways of enlightening people about this issue, and I think they are very effective and they're worth seeing, and they pop up as pop-ups on the internet, but I think they're also coming across in other media. Now, with the various campaigns on over the last week, we've had Mental Health Week at the end of September, we've had the Pink Shirt Day, and not to be confused with Pink Ribbon Day activities, because of course October is Breast Cancer Month and there's lots of people having morning teas wearing pink and having pink cupcakes at morning tea as a way of fundraising for breast cancer. But we have got issues that people are talking about more and more. And the Mental Health Foundation has a positive program called Five Ways to Wellbeing. And I have talked about these five ways on the program in the past. And being able to connect with other people is an extremely important part of looking after your wellness. And that's what was at risk, I think, under COVID with the lockdowns, was that people felt their natural ways of linking and connecting with people, their natural networks and things, were actually closed. They weren't going to various restaurants or cinemas or whatever, and they weren't bumping into people the way they would expect to do. Markets, fairs, anywhere where there were large crowds where they might go and rub shoulders with people, they were missing out on that. We were all missing out on these options. And so finding a way to connect with people if you didn't have much of a bubble, if you were living alone or you're living in a restricted environment with just, say, one other person who was a flatmate, if you relied on getting your social needs met through going out and having social activities in crowded spaces, you were out of luck. So the need to be able to connect is a really important one. And so looking after your well-being and restarting connections when they've dropped away is often difficult for some people. So it takes deliberate action. And so that's worthwhile, actually taking time to talk with friends about how you're going to restart things, how you're going to venture out and what you're going to consider doing. Now, being active is another one of these five ways to well-being. And, of course, exercise and activity has a huge impact on your mental health. It doesn't have to be vigorous, and you don't have to take on ridiculous challenges and try to do extreme things. You can simply include a walk once or twice a week regularly for half an hour, and it makes an amazing difference. So looking at ways of connecting those two things up. So how can you connect with somebody and be active? You can actually have a walking partner and ask around amongst your friends and find out who is likely to want to do something like this. And it's surprising how you can do it. I mean, I actually do it with people who are some distance away from me, and we don't get to meet very often. So we actually combine it with a walk, and then we know we're ticking off two boxes at once. I'm not going to mention other items in the five ways to well-being in this program, but I just think it's a program worth looking into. And if you want a speaker, or you want to highlight it within your own circle when you're meeting and looking for a topic, I suggest you go to the Mental Health Foundation website, because there's plenty of information and there's a lot of free resources available. Volunteering, which a lot of seniors do, brings its own rewards, but it can actually bring stresses as well. And we've talked about these in the past, but as part of mental health, I think it's useful to review. If you have a role where you volunteer, just do some testing out and charting of the waters concerning how stressful you're finding it. What is particularly stressful about it? Would you do it for another 5 years, or do you see it as something of a chore? And really do some homework and thinking, hard thinking, and talk to people about what you could change and raise issues. So if you feel that you're not valued enough, let people know. I think it's time to speak up and time to share what our experiences actually are. Welcome feedback from people. So if you want to communicate with me, annemarie.curie@gmail.com. I do share this email quite often with people, but I like to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and hear from you next week. Bye. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.